Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me again, as always, is Mr. Matt Caraccio. Matt, welcome.
Paul, I cannot wait. We go from the people carrying the football to the people throwing the football. We're talking about the quarterbacks now.
Yes, if you have been listening the last few episodes, we did a three-part preview of the 2019 wide receivers, and then last week we followed that up with a two-parts on the 2019 running back class. Well, this week we turn our attention to the quarterbacks, a very intriguing class to break down and kind of see how they stack up against years past and what we think of them as prospects in our film evals. So we're going to do about eight or so guys tonight. And then in part two, we will do another eight guys or so, obviously give you some names of a watch list for other draft eligible prospects, and then obviously a couple underclassmen that you should have on your radar as well. But before we get started, we're really excited to announce that we have two new sponsors of the podcast here to kick off this, you know, college football season that is now right around the corner. One of our new sponsors is SquadQL, and the second one is the Quant Edge as well. Both of these you're going to hear us talk about on this podcast tonight. We're super excited to have both these aboard, and we're really thrilled. I mean, just give you a little background on SquadQL first, which is really intriguing. So you want an unfair advantage to dominate your fantasy football league? Well, look no further and download SquadQL, the only mobile app you need to crush your friends and rivals this year. SquadQL recommends the best starting lineup for you each week based on your starters, bench players, and free agent pool. You may ask how does SquadQL actually do this? The app connects directly with your Yahoo, ESPN, and CBS leagues, pulling in your actual roster and your league scoring system. SquadQL provides waiver and trade recommendations, plus the app gives you player rankings each week, and it's all based on your league settings. SquadQL truly is your go-to app this fantasy football season. Head over to squadql.com to download SquadQL, your all-in-one fantasy football manager. SquadQL is brought to you by the creators of RotoQL, the leading daily fantasy lineup optimizer trusted by over 100,000 DFS players. You can also download RotoQL for free for both Apple and Android. So, Matt, any quick thoughts on this sponsor now that we have and the intriguing, you know, programs that they offer?
I mean, for me, I'm excited because, you know, I know, Paul, from my perspective and where I live, you know, I haven't had a chance to really dive into this world. And when you have opportunities like this with a company that has as rich of a background as SquadQL has, it really is something that is intriguing me to maybe step into the space and get a better understanding of maybe what I'm hearing all the hoopla about. And it's great to know that this type of opportunity exists out there. So I'm excited to take advantage of it and maybe see what it's all about.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing that always frustrated me in redraft leagues is when I joined a lot of different leagues, when they were on all different platforms. I had one league on ESPN. I had one league on CBS. I had four on Yahoo, you know, every Sunday morning, every, you know, waiver wire day, you know, trying to go in and make moves and look at rosters on three different websites. You know, it becomes a little cumbersome, but this app does it for you. It brings it all into one space. So you don't have to log into ESPN, Yahoo, and CBS. You could do it all from one app, make all your, you know, your roster moves, your waiver acquisitions, you know, all with the SquadQL app. So really excited that we sponsored up with these guys and partnered up with them. And you'll definitely hear us talking more about them moving forward as well. Once the year starts, I'm excited to use these products and definitely we'll be sharing our thoughts on the podcast, on social media as well. So Matt, why don't we get right into this? Why don't you kick it off for us?
Beautiful, because I think the first player that I'm going to kick it off with is a quarterback that I've been intrigued with for some time. And many might not know that this quarterback is very similar to a recent freshman coming into USC, and that's JT Daniels, in that this quarterback actually graduated high school a year early in order to pursue his dreams of playing at the next level. And that's South Carolina quarterback Jake Bentley. Yeah, South Carolina quarterback Jake Bentley actually graduated high school a year early. So you'd be surprised at how young he is. But he is currently a junior in terms of his class standing at South Carolina. And he's 6'3", and he is 220 pounds. And last year he had, in 2017, he passed for 2,555 yards, good for a 62.4 completion percentage, 16 touchdowns to 11 interceptions. But Jake Bentley is a guy that I had a chance to watch for quite some time. And I think the first thing that pops out is you can't deny when you look at his statistics, you wonder, you know, is there really something to be worried about? I mean, 16 touchdowns to 11 interceptions. But I think that when you start peeling back the layers of what he's good at, the first thing I think that jumps off the page for you is his athletic ability. And I think he uses that athletic ability to enable him to be really functional on or off structure. I think he uses it to try to manage the pocket. But I also think he does it to get out of trouble when necessary. So when the play breaks down and passing lanes are, you know, restricted or congested, he's able to at least create yards, you know, in the open field and gain yards with his legs, which I think is an important quality of a quarterback, maybe not as much at the next level as it is at the collegiate level, but I do think it's something to consider. His arm talent for sure is something that I really liked, especially in the short to intermediate areas. And I wouldn't say intermediate, I would say more of those short areas. I would say from the line of scrimmage to about 8 to 10 yards, I would say that's where I really liked his accuracy and arm talent. I think that's where he was really functional in making the offense move. Because when you look at South Carolina, they were very much a spread team where they wanted to get the ball in and out of his hands very, very, very quickly. There wasn't a lot of drop back passing with like sustained long-term type of drop back passing schemes that we were able to glean from some of his footage. A lot of it was attacking the short areas. And I thought he was solid in those areas. I really thought he showed good arm talent. I think he put it on the right shoulder of the running back coming out of the backfield. I think he did a nice job putting it on the face mask when it came to slant routes, you know, for wide receivers. Anything in the short area, I thought he was very good at. And I think that can't be overstated because as we see the NFL moving towards a space game, I think Jake Bentley, you know, has an opportunity to kind of make some hay as we move forward. In terms of his weaknesses, his accuracy for me in the intermediate to deep areas were things that I saw kind of jump out. Not to say that he didn't have the arm strength to propel the football with velocity down the field, but I thought his timing and anticipation on throws in those areas were concerning at times. I think he has the ability to stretch the field, but I think in terms of his timing, I think there was something left to be desired. And I can speak specifically right now to the spring game. They were very excited about this upcoming season being a way more up-tempo, fast break style offense. And they think that Jake Bentley, and I would agree with them here, Paul, and I'm interested to hear if you thought this, they argued that Jake Bentley was at his best when the offense was moving the fastest. They felt like when they were moving fast and they were playing up-tempo, no huddle, spread, they felt like Jake Bentley was able to get in the zone. What that tells me as an analyst is that tells me that Jake Bentley is very much a player that you can let command your offense, but you have to let him kind of go. I don't think he's the guy that you're going to, I don't think he's going to work great from a huddle. And that's, I know that's a terrible thing to say, but I wonder if he's a player who's better suited for this modern NFL game that's emerging, the spread, modern, up-tempo, no-huddle style NFL game. I'm wondering if Jake Bentley, 10 years ago, I think we would have a lot of concerns. Now, I want to say that the game is moving in a direction that's most conducive to where he's strong, which is moving fast, moving quickly, having a bunch of audibles, letting him make those calls at the line of scrimmage, and letting him play up-tempo, fast-paced, full-field football. Paul, what did you see from Jake Bentley?
Yeah, I mean, when I talk about how he wins and the scheme fit, I did talk about the spread offense. I said that is one offense that I think he can play in, but I also thought that he showed a skill set that he could play in a traditional pro style as well. So actually, I put his best suited in a pro style or spread offense. I thought it incorporates a lot of play action passes, occasional vertical shots down the field. I even said his athleticism showed off the ability to maybe even run some RPOs at the next level as well, because, you know, he does have that athleticism. He does have the ability to roll out. You can move the launch point a little bit. I still am intrigued by him. I thought he was going to take a little bit more of a step further last year than he did. But, you know, the loss of Deebo Samuel, Bryan Edwards didn't really have the year last year as good as maybe of a breakout as we expected. I have a feeling we're going to see a much better year out of Jake Bentley this year. I still think he possesses low-end to average NFL starter traits, or if not, high-end backup. I think he could be a guy who's on the early day three area of the draft range, but I could see him being one of those guys that, you know, every year we hear some of those guys, and some of them move up into day two, and some don't. Like Davis Webb moved himself up to, you know, round three last year, 2 years ago. You know, there was talk that Nate Peterman was, but he didn't. You know, then this past year, there was a lot of talk about Kyle LaLetta. Like, you know, he ended up falling to the early part of round four. But I feel like Jake Bentley is a guy who kind of lives in that world where he's going to be a guy that's going to have some followers. And there's going to be some people that I think next year are talking about him as, you know, a day two, early day three pick. I think if he has a good year, you could see that. I really like his ability to go through progressions to find the open man quickly, which I think suits him well if you're going to put him in that spread offense. He's got a quick release to get the ball out to his playmakers. At times, I thought he tried to fit the ball into tight windows or do too much, and it led to some interceptions. And I did think that when he misses, it was often high, and I thought that was a little bit too wide of a base that he opened up with. So I think he's got to clean up a little bit in that regards. But overall, really solid player. I'm intrigued if they're going to do more up-tempo stuff this year, because we know that's the wave of the NFL. They're doing a lot more of that. So if he could show that, you know, tool in his toolbox, I think that only helps him. So Bentley's a guy definitely intrigues.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I don't think I've ever seen anybody on film that I just leave going, you know, okay, what else can you do? Because I really like what you're doing right now. He worked under center. He did everything that you wanted to see. Again, I can't say enough about him leaving school early and then jumping into the college world where he became a starter early too. I mean, it says a lot about what he was capable of accomplishing. You're seeing a young player really making strides at a really high level in the SEC. So yes, I continue to be a fan of him as well. And Paul, let's move on to a player that I think has really been around for a while as well. I mean, I feel like he could have came out last year. I feel like we've been talking about him for quite some time. And that's Jake Browning, number three from Washington. He's a senior. He's 6'1". He's 210 pounds. And last year in 2017, he passed for 2,544 yards, good for 68.8 completion percentage, 18 touchdowns to just 5 interceptions. Paul, just take me through a couple of his strengths, and maybe if you could you really break down some areas where you saw some of these strengths really kind of break through on film?
Yeah, so I mean, Jake Browning is a guy who, I hate to say it and I hope I'm wrong, but to me, he looks as a guy who, great college quarterback, but not sure it's going to translate to the next level. And, you know, the NFL style quarterback is changing. So maybe there is an opportunity for him to transition to the NFL level. When I watch him, his strengths to me stand out right away. His mobility and his athleticism, his competitive toughness, and his leadership qualities. You know, when you watch him play, you know, he shows very good athleticism with his quickness, agility, escapability, and mobility in and out of the pocket to keep plays alive. He also shows an ability to run and pick up yards when the play breaks down. I think that's a really good calling card to have. It's something that he shows the ability to play out of structure and pick up yards, you know, with his legs. So I think that's something that's really good. His competitive toughness, willing to take a hit in the pocket or in the open field, bounce right back up. You know, those are things, you know, the team seems to rally around him, you know, and he shows good leadership in that huddle. To me, he's a West Coast or spread style facilitator, mostly in the short to intermediate range. He's effective on play actions and design rollouts, and I think his mobility to make plays with his legs allows him to, you know, do some RPO stuff, move the launch point, you know, and play out of structure and make plays when the play breaks down. My concerns, though, for him, besides the size and frame, which obviously is a little bit of concern, is mostly the arm talent, to be frankly honest with you. To me, it's below average to average arm talent in terms of velocity and strength. I didn't see a lot of NFL throws, struggles to throw the ball vertically down the field, outside the number, or in the contested situations. I did see solid to good accuracy in the short to intermediate range, but accuracy drops from pushing the ball outside the hash marks or vertically down the field. Somebody might say, well, I don't understand it. We saw John Ross make a lot of plays and Dante Pettis vertically down the field. But if you go back and watch them, those were very rarely contested situations. Usually, Ross or Pettis had multiple steps on their guy, so he was able just to kind of get his body into it and throw the ball down the field. I'm not saying he can't throw a 40-yard pass. He obviously can. But in the NFL level, it's a little bit different, you know, than having a wide receiver wide open streaking the sidelines. So that's for me the main thing that I'm most concerned about. I don't think he did a great job going through progressions. I thought he was more of a first read, you know, and if not, then kind of play off script a little bit. But he does do a good job getting the ball out quickly to his playmakers and letting them make plays after the catch. To me, I think he's more of a third string or practice squad quarterback when he gets into the league, but could develop into a backup quarterback. To me, he's a late day three or a UDF guy. You know, I think Kellen Moore, you know, who's made quite a career in the NFL as a backup quarterback with, you know, more mobility, I think, and athleticism than a guy like Kellen Moore. But that's my take on Jake Browning. Did you see anything? I mean, Washington, we've obviously watched him play even without doing, you know, deep film evals, you know, for years. Did he ever stand out as a guy for you that you thought NFL starter?
No, I'm right there with you. And from my notes to what I had, a lot of it mimicked the same things that you said. I mean, the first thing that popped out to me was, I do agree with you. I think the arm talent overall, you know, in terms of, again, when we talk about arm talent from an evaluative perspective with quarterbacks, we're talking about their ability to not just throw the football downfield, but their ability to match the trajectory of their passes to the route concepts in a particular play. So were they able to get the ball out on time with the proper velocity to match the tempo and speed of the wide receiver's route so that wide receiver could take advantage and exploit as much as possible the space in front of them? If the ball is behind them late or lacking timing, then they're unable to use the available space in front of them and really take advantage as runners after the catch. So as a quarterback, I thought that's where he really struggled at times, especially on downfield passes. I mean, you're right. The exposures you pointed to, I don't think that can be overstated. When you have a player running downfield wide open, versus when they're in some type of contested situation. And we're not talking about a cornerback draped on them. We're talking about tight window throws, throws where it has to be over the outside shoulder towards the boundary. So it's only in a place where the corner, where your wide receiver can make a play on the football. Those types of deep passes versus streaking downfield with several steps on the defender, those add a completely different layer of psychological stress to the player and his ability to perform on the field. And to think that it doesn't, I think is silly, because there's a huge difference. And I thought when Jake Browning had more tight window throws on deep areas of the field where he had to put it to them, that's where I thought some of his arm talent suffered a little bit. But that being said, like you said, I was okay with him when it was, again, an up-tempo kind of, he's moving the field, he's moving just like Jake Bentley. When they're moving fast, he was at his best. He was able to move down the field and make some completions in the short area. So, I mean, I thought that's where he was at his best. And Paul, let's go on to a player that I actually really like, and I think that there's going to be room for him at the NFL level, and he's a player that I just continue to enjoy watching play, and that's Ryan Finley, number 15, from North Carolina State. The redshirt senior is 6'3", 210 pounds, and last year he passed for 3,200 yards, good for a 64% completion percentage, 16 touchdowns, and just 6 interceptions. You know, the thing that I'm most impressed with when I watched Ryan Finley is I thought his accuracy with the football was excellent. That was an aspect of his game that really stands out to me. I always felt like he put it right where he needed to put it. He had good ball placement. He really set up his players to make yards after the catch. He was very efficient in distributing the football. And again, that's something where I took that note, that little piece out of skill acquisition, and I said to myself, this year, when I watch a quarterback, what is a quarterback? A quarterback's primary job is to distribute the football to his playmakers so points can be put on the board. If I can't put points on the board by myself as a runner, then I better get it to the guy that can put points on the board. And my job is to identify the most immediate threat to the defense and get the ball in his hands so he can make plays. And a lot of that has to do with accuracy and being able to put the ball in a place where the wide receiver or running back can make plays in the open field is really no short task. And I felt like he was good at doing that. And I thought a lot of it was highlighted by his play speed overall. He was a good decision maker. He made good decisions in plays. He knew exactly the timing. He matched the trajectory of his football to his routes. And I thought he did a nice job doing that. Paul, those were some of the strengths that I saw off the huff, so to speak, with Ryan Finley as I'm going through this process. What else have you seen from him?
Yeah, I mean, the decision-making accuracy are two areas that I think were spot on right there. You know, it's intriguing. You see a guy who's 6'3", and this is why sometimes, you know, you see a guy on the hoof, you do some paper scouting, and you sometimes, you know, people who do that can come to conclusions that maybe just aren't accurate. You see Ryan Finley, and I bet most people would look at him and think his arm talent must be really good. And not so much. One of my concerns that I have for him, to be honest with you, because you already really harped on his greatest strengths, in my opinion, but one of the concerns I have is his arm talent. And it's not bad. I mean, I would say it's probably average to solid in terms of his velocity and his strength. You know, so it's just he doesn't have that overall the strength and velocity to, I think, really push it into super tight windows or thread the needle or push it vertically down the field with a lot of consistency. You know, I think he, you know, in terms of he throws with great anticipation, good timing, he very good to great accuracy in that short to intermediate range, especially over the middle of the field. But I thought his accuracy was probably just average to good in terms of vertical shots or passes outside the numbers. And while he can make every NFL throw, he seemed to be way more comfortable in the short to intermediate range with only occasional vertical shots. And I think part of that and his comfort level in the middle of the field is that I think he knows that his velocity and his arm strength isn't, you know, great, isn't elite, isn't top of the line. It's average. And I think he knows how to use that and be a very efficient and good player. I mean, and again, I mean, Pat Shurmur, New York Football Giants head coach, said, you know, when discussing Kyle Laletta, that arm talent, you know, and velocity and strength are way down the pecking order in terms of what he values as a quarterback. So I'm not saying that this is going to hinder, you know, Ryan Finley from being an NFL quarterback, because I actually don't. I actually like Ryan Finley a lot. It's just an area, just like when we talked about Kyle Oletta, that we talked about a little bit. It's an area where, you know, he checks off a lot of boxes, but he's not a guy who's going to throw a rope 45 yards down the field outside the numbers. That's not his game. But he's got a lot of stuff, and you talked a lot about his positives, and I brought up, you know, my biggest concern, you know, is the overall arm talent, and then obviously lack of mobility or athleticism. He's not a guy who's going to be moving around in the pocket. You're not going to move the launch point too much. You're not going to ask him, you know, to do a lot. He's a traditional pocket, you know, passing quarterback. You know, I think that's where he's going to live. He can go through his progressions well, find the second and third reads, shows good competitive toughness, stands tall in the pocket, good intelligence with the football, limits his mistakes. But again, he's not a guy who's going to play out of structure. You know, when the play breaks down, you know, he's going to struggle a little bit. So I think he's got the skill set to develop into an average NFL starter. I think he's a guy who could go on day two of the NFL draft next year. I think, you know, he's best suited in a spread or a West Coast style passing offense that mostly attacks in the short to intermediate range with the occasional vertical shots. So that's, I think he manages the game well, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think he's a player that's going to intrigue NFL teams. And listen, he plays in the ACC. He's going to have a chance to play against some really good competition. It's going to be fun to kind of watch him this year and see if there's any changes in his overall game. Matt, any thoughts on Ryan Finley? Any final thoughts?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, when you talk about developmental players, I don't think Ryan Finley is that. I think Ryan Finley is a ready, set package to come into the NFL and really play an effective role for a team. I don't know if that means that he's going to be the bona fide franchise player. That's not what he is. But I do think that he is a guy that you can build an entire he could be, at the very least, I think, a great backup quarterback for a long time. And I think that's where he initially fits for me as well. Going on to another player, I think when you talk about developmental quarterbacks and players that intrigue, I think Nick Fitzgerald from Mississippi State is a guy that kind of has stood out for a while now. I mean, he's a senior. He's 6'4". He's 230 pounds. He's got all the measurables in the entire world. In 2017, he passed for 1,782 yards, good for 55.6% completion percentage, 15 touchdowns, and 11 interceptions. He rushed also for almost 1,000 yards, good for 984 yards on the ground, and 14 touchdowns. Paul, I mean, when you talk about a player that just oozes upside, Nick Fitzgerald has to come to mind. But it's hard to deny that in terms of his weaknesses, accuracy, you know, decision-making, he lacks that kind of anticipation that we talk about, his touch, his ability to put the ball where he needs to on time. I mean, those things stood out as major concerns for me, at least, moving on. But what about some of his strengths? What did you see from him as a player? Why does he ooze this kind of upside that could intrigue teams?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of potential and upside. I mean, the things that stick out in terms of his strengths, I mean, size and frame, 6'4", 230. He is built, you know, very strong, can take a beating. His arm talent, I think, in terms of his velocity and his strength, I mean, because we know, you know, arm talent goes further than that, obviously accuracy and other stuff, but his arm talent in terms of his velocity and strength, which I think is still what sometimes most people, you know, think about when someone says arm talent, it's very good. He can make every NFL throw. His athleticism and his mobility, his toughness. I think he's got a quick release, and he's got a lot of experience. You know, to me, his athleticism, you see it, very good to great in terms of his quickness, agility to move in and out of the pocket to extend plays. He's tough to take down. He's got a little Ben Roethlisberger in him in that regard. He shows quickness and speed to be a threat running the ball to the outside or up the middle on design runs or when the play breaks down. Think of Cam Newton in terms of rushing ability. That's kind of what Fitzgerald offers because he's such a big man. I mean, he's not like, you know, Lamar Jackson or RG3 rushing the ball. He's very Cam Newton-like rushing the ball with that size. So I think, you know, he shows, even at 6'4", 230, he shows some quickness and speed to be a threat. His combination of size and athleticism makes him a dangerous red zone weapon. And I wrote, similar to Cam Newton or Tim Tebow. If you think about how Tim Tebow used to be used in the red zone, how Cam Newton is used near the goal line, I think Fitzgerald offers that. So he offers a unique skill set that I think is very intriguing. I mean, that arm talent, he has the ability to make every NFL throw, but you already talked about it. His accuracy is concerning at all three levels of the field. His ability to throw in anticipation and touch is something that must need improvement this year. His progression reading, you know, to find the open man if the first read is not open, and decision making to reduce the number of interceptions, all of that need to be improved this year, need to be refined. He shows the ability to play off structure, which is great, but he's got to show the ability to play more from the pocket, make better decisions, and show cleaner and crisper accuracy, you know, and the ability to make good decisions and go through his progressions. I think he's got a lot of traits to develop into a starter, but I think he's more of a back right now. You know, he would enter the league as a backup with the upside to develop into more. I think he could intrigue teams, though, as a late day two prospect, but I think it's somewhere late day two to day three, to be honest with you, because there's a lot of pros, but at the same time, there's a lot of areas that are going to be a little concerning as well.
Well, and I think this is a great time to talk about making good decisions, Paul, because I wanted to take this opportunity to talk a little bit about an affiliate and sponsor that we talked about earlier. And this is a shot out there for all of you DFS players. If you're interested in daily fantasy football, or you're interested in that world, well, the Quant Edge is something that you guys got to listen to right now. There's no more getting crushed by the pros. The QuantEdge.com is going to give you the tools that you need this year to play like a pro. We talk about context all the time on this show. Well, these tools really give you that context to make the right decision. With a lineup optimizer, an injury tool, a wide receiver cornerback matchup tool, and a head-to-head tool, you'll be pretty much armed with everything that you need to win. Make up to 150 lineups in seconds and get a true understanding of a player's value. You have the opportunity to see the week's matchups to exploit and compare two players to make, so that way you can make the decision that you need to do in order to make the right decision on game day. It doesn't stop with groundbreaking tools. They have more than 10 industry experts on staff that will give you exclusive access to over 20 betting and fantasy articles and podcasts a week, and can join the TQE community by participating in the premium member chat. We at Saturday to Sunday Football actually have a special opportunity for you. For you guys out there and all of our loyal listeners, we have a promo code that you guys can use right now to get 15% off a season-long subscription, but you have to act fast. This deal actually ends August 23rd. So you might be hearing this tomorrow on August 22nd. That gives you about 48 hours or so to really take advantage of this. And that code is S2S Edge. That's the letter S, the number 2, S, Edge, E-D-G-E. That promo code, again, will give you 15% off a season subscription. Again, I can't say enough about their tools. Their tools are really going to help you, no pun intended, get the edge on your competition and enjoy this upcoming season. So, Paul, right back into the quarterbacks that we're looking at, let's take a look at a player that's been on our radars for quite some time. And I'd be remiss if I even begin to give my thoughts on a player that probably, I think you might have a full fat head on your wall of him that you sleep next to. But that's DeAndre Francois. DeAndre Francois, number 12 from Florida State, the redshirt junior. He's 6'1", 205 pounds. And yes, in 2016, after that really tragic injury last year, in 2016, he passed for 3,350 yards, good for 58.8% completion percentage, 20 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions. And in 2017, in that one game, if we want to take a look at it, he did have 210 yards, good for 57.6% completions percentage. He had already thrown for a touchdown and 2 interceptions. But again, not much can be gleaned from that game. Paul, this is a player that I think you and I were really just intrigued, and we felt like his circumstances, we were just talking about the Quant Edge, and we were talking about how context is so important. He's a player where I think if you just look at his numbers in isolation, I think you miss out on a really good player.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a guy who I thought last year, if he had a good year, he could have came out after his redshirt sophomore year. Now, again, he doesn't check off that boxes in terms of his size and frame. 6'1", 205, you know, there's some accuracy issues that need to be refined. Obviously, now some injury concerns. But this is why you need to watch the film with a guy like Francois. When I watch him, I love his arm talent. I think his velocity and strength, you know, are two areas that I think are very good. I think he can make, he's comfortable making every single NFL throw, and he revels almost in throwing into contested situations, allowing his receivers to make plays. He shows a willingness to push the ball vertically down the field and outside the numbers. You know, people might look at that accuracy percentage and be concerned, but if you watched him back in 2016, if you watched the offense that Jimbo Fisher ran, he wasn't getting any dink and dunks. This wasn't a guy who was padding his completion percentage with a lot of dump offs, short stuff, screens. You were seeing a guy who was able to push the ball down the field vertically into contested situations, intermediate throws on a regular basis. You know, to me, you know, that's part of the reason why you saw his completion percentage being at 59%. They just weren't a dink and dunk type offense. You know, so I love the arm talent, his pocket awareness and mechanics, his quick release, his toughness and athleticism overall. You know, I think he shows good athleticism when moving laterally inside and outside of the pocket to extend the play. He has the quickness and agility to get out of the pocket to make plays with his legs if needed. Now, we'll see after his injury, you know, if he's still willing to do that. But he was never a guy that looked to take off. He was always a guy who wanted to play from the pocket and move around the pocket and pass first and only run if the play really broke down. I already talked about his willingness to make every NFL pro. To me, he shows an uncanny ability to throw in anticipation and touch. He must improve his accuracy at all levels of the field. But I think part of that, again, I think that 59% is a little misleading, but it's obviously areas to improve and refine as well. He's got a quick release with good mechanics and good footwork. He shows elite competitive toughness in terms of willing to stay in the pocket and take hits repeatedly as he looks for the open man. If you go back and watch some of that 2016 film, oh my God, the Clemson game, I don't know how he made it out of the game standing and not like literally like on a stretcher, you know, on the sidelines, because they were pummeling him the entire game. And all he just kept doing was strapping it up. The only other game in the history of me watching football that I saw a quarterback get beat to that level was Eli Manning in the NFC Championship game way back when in 2007 against the San Francisco 49ers. That's it. It was truly remarkable. Overall, to me, he's a guy that shows the ability to go through progressions. I think in that Jimbo Fisher passing offense, it was a very pro-style offense that asked him to make a lot of reads. I thought he played with tremendous poise. I didn't think the pressure rattled him. I thought he stepped up in the big moments. He had a little Jameis Winston in him from when Jameis Winston was at FSU, that no matter what happened, Francois would come up with big plays in big moments. He must refine his decision-making in terms of being not overly aggressive, you know, and understand when to take chances and when not to. And I think if he does that, you'll see his interception numbers, you know, even lower than it is. Not that he threw a lot in that as well, but he did put the ball in harm's way at times. I think he's got the skill set to be a starting quarterback. I think he's probably going to be drafted at the NFL level, though, to be a backup quarterback. So I think his NFL draft projection is probably early day three. I think he's a day two talent, and I'm hoping that this year, back a full year, he maybe shows the ability to move up, because I do think he can play at the next level. I think he can play in a pro-style offense, which obviously is going to be a little intriguing, because I don't think that's what they're going to run at Florida State. So, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong there, and any other thoughts on Francois?
No, I agree with everything that you said. I mean, listen, when I look at him physically, I think that there's a great need for him to add more size to his frame. I think it's 6'1", you know, 205 pounds. I think he needs to add a little bit more armor, so that way he can survive the rigors in the NFL. So from a physical standpoint, I definitely agree with that, that he needs to put on a little bit more size. I agree with you in terms of showing his ability to throw with anticipation and touch. One thing that really stands out to me on his film is that he hits you in stride. He's the type of a quarterback that'll hit you in stride. But I noticed that when he has to be accurate, sometimes in tight windows, that wasn't always his forte. He was more or less like a guy who he was capable of going through, like, you know, second and third progression type reads, working front side to back side and back to front side. He was capable of he was capable of doing that. And I thought that that's where he was most successful. When things were on time and in structure, I thought he was very effective. I do think that his accuracy overall was a lot of it had to do with the fact that that's when the play broke down, or when there were things that were going awry, whether it be that pressure in the pocket that just became overwhelming, or if it was a wide receiver getting jostled at the line and not getting into his route on time. I thought that's where you really saw some of his accuracy struggle throughout the entire field. So I think I left my first exposures of him when I was watching him in 2016, way back when, was I think this kid can develop. I'm interested to see how it goes. So unfortunately, last year we didn't get a chance to see that. And I know right now, when you look at, you know, what they're planning to do in Florida State, it's going to be a little bit of a different type of system than we're used to. It won't be a pro style system. It's going to be a way more of a spread option system. It's going to be way more up tempo, and they're going to be looking to play a different style of football in Florida. So I think for fans of the game, if you've been in love with Jimbo Fisher for years and you've enjoyed that style of play, you might want to turn on a Texas A&M game. I don't know what else to tell you, because you're not going to see it this year. You're just not going to see it. It's just not going to be that style of play. And I think that that says a lot. If you want to get a feel for a little bit of what they were doing, if you want to get an idea of kind of what was going on, you know, I think you got to go and ask yourself, what are other teams, you know, in like we just talked about with, we talked about South Carolina. Go and take a look at South Carolina. Go and look at what they want to do. Go and take a look at Missouri and go and look at what's going on there. Take a look at what's going on in Mississippi State and go and take a look at what they're going to be doing this year. I think that's the style of football that you're going to see this year from Florida State, more of that up-tempo spread. And I'm interested to see if DeAndre Francois wins this job, because I know Justin Blackman is going to be a guy that they're really strongly considering this year. So I'd like to see how this all goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because Blackman might suit the new style. But one thing I'll say, and then I'm going to transition this right to the next guy, is if Francois wins the job and plays well, he's going to give NFL evaluators and, you know, draft Twitter analysts, he's going to give something that we rarely get to see: a quarterback completely run two different styles. Because how often do we hear, oh, this guy's a great spread quarterback, but how's he going to transition to the NFL if he's asked to not play spread or up tempo? Well, with DeAndre Francois, we're going to get to see potentially him run two completely different offenses. And that might be kind of intriguing, because it might open up the door for an NFL evaluator to be like, listen, this guy showed capable of running pro style. He showed capable of running up tempo slash spread. You know, it might open the door where he might have tape on both things that might say, listen, this guy showed the ability to do both. It really can, you know, vary our offense a lot. So I think that could actually end up working in his favor. So it's going to be fun to kind of watch that. So
Paul has his DeAndre Francois action figure on pre-order right now from the bookstore.
I'm ready. I'm all in on him.
Get the bobblehead going. No, Paul, I love him. I'm right there with you. I'm excited for him this year as well. So let's move on to a player that I think, man, if you say size matters or size doesn't matter, then you got to be really intrigued by the next player.
Yeah, and that's Will Grier out of West Virginia. He's a redshirt senior. He's 6'1", 214 pounds, 3,490 passing yards last year, 34 touchdowns, and 12 interceptions. I got to be honest with you. If you were a fan of Baker Mayfield last year.
Right on. So I can't believe you just said that.
And I'm not saying you got to think he's going to be the first pick in the NFL draft, because I'm not saying that. But if you were a fan of how Baker Mayfield played when you watched him last summer, if you watched him during the season, you see a lot of similarities with Will Grier in terms of stylistically, the size, the frame, the ability to do things. You know, let me just get right into it. In terms of things that I like, I see good accuracy. I really do. I saw a guy who was good to very good accuracy in the short to intermediate range, and average to good accuracy pushing the ball vertically down the field. I saw an ability to throw with great touch and anticipation on throws, especially on fades in the red zone. I feel like Will Greer would put on a clinic throwing the fade route toward in the end zone. Really impressed with his touch and his anticipation. His arm talent. He's another guy similar to Baker Mayfield last year. He's got the arm talent. He's got solid to good arm talent in terms of velocity and strength. He can make every NFL throw, willing to put the ball in the contested situations, push the ball vertically down the field. His athleticism, I think it's above average to good with its ability to move around inside and outside of the pocket to extend plays. His ability to make plays off structure. I almost think he's more comfortable playing off structure, similar to a guy like Sam Darnold, who we credited him with his ability to play off structure a lot last year as well. A really quick release with good mechanics. Those are the things that I really like. I think he possesses a quick and clean release with good footwork. I already talked about the touch and anticipation. In terms of some concerns, obviously the size and frame. You know, can that withstand the rigors of the NFL? You know, all the concerns that are slowly moving away. And I'm glad that we're starting to evaluate
finally on their
talent and not just say, oh, he's 6'1", he can't play in the NFL. He's 6'5", he's the prototype. Sure, he was a prototype 30 years ago, but the NFL is evolving, the NFL is changing. You know, it's not a immediate deterrent anymore. You know, we just saw Baker Mayfield be the first pick in the NFL draft.
And so Paul, to that point, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think that since we're obviously having this discussion right around preseason, it would be silly if I at least didn't behave a little bit like we haven't seen some of these rookies that were really coveted for their mobility start to succeed a little bit. I mean, if you go up and down the line, we knew Josh Rosen would be the quintessential passer from the pocket. And he's proven to be that guy. We've seen some improvement throughout the preseason and so forth. But Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson were guys that we knew were just more comfortable when the visual field was moving and they were moving. And when they were moving in sync with it, they were more comfortable distributing the football. So I don't think playing off structure or playing on the move is necessarily the dirty word it used to be.
No, Sam Darnold too. I've watched every snap of Sam Darnold this preseason. And while he has yet to really attack vertically down the field has been one of the biggest things, his ability to move laterally in the pocket and then get out of the pocket when needed and still be able to make the throw, that ability to play when the play breaks down is one of his best calling cards. It truly is. You know, in terms of finishing up Greer here, his decision-making is one area where I do think he's got to harness it in a little bit. He's got to improve his decision-making in terms of reducing the number of mistakes and interceptions. He's got to, I mentioned it before with a previous player, but Greer, even more importantly, has to refine his aggressiveness. You don't want to take it away from him because it's what makes him special. But he's got to understand when to throw the ball away rather than take a bad sack or completely throw it up for grabs. So that's something he's got to harness, that aggressiveness, a little bit more before he gets to the NFL, because they're going to be a little concerned about the interception total and just throwing the ball up for grabs. To me, he shows good pocket awareness. He's able to get through his progressions to find the open receiver. It kind of goes back to Baker Mayfield, where people think just because they're in the Big 12, they're playing spread, that these guys never go through progressions, never make reads. I don't think that's the case. I think we start with Baker Mayfield last year. I think we see it with Will Greer. He shows the ability to go through progressions to find the second or third read. It's not always a one read, you know, like some spreads are, where he gets the ball out immediately. And we already talked about he possesses the ability to extend plays when the play breaks down and keeps his eyes down the field, which is such a good, important trait, looking to make a big play. And obviously competitive toughness, does not get rattled when facing pressure, handles it well. To me, he's best suited in an offense that uses a lot of air raid or spread concepts and uses an up-tempo pace. To me, he's got a skill set to develop into an average to good NFL starter. To me, he's a day two prospect right now, but we've seen these quarterbacks get moved up the board. If he cleans up a little bit of the decision making, I think he could push his way into the late part of round one as well.
I'm right there with you. I'm a really big fan of what I've seen from Will Greer. Not only now, but when he had just the opportunity to start a little bit at Florida, I liked what I saw as well. And even coming out of high school, he was a player that I was really high on. I really enjoyed watching him play the game. And I'm going to tell you the things that I agree with you most on is I think that accuracy to push the ball down the field can't be overstated. And the reason why is, again, going back to what we talked about with arm talent, that ability to push the ball vertically speaks a lot to that fine coordination that the quarterback possesses in terms of adjusting his trajectory and velocity to match that of his wide receiver's routes. It says a lot about their coordinative skills and their motor coordination as a thrower. When you can see a quarterback throw vertically outside the numbers or outside the hash marks with consistency and good ball placement, I really think you're talking about a player that can be successful in the NFL. And I'm not saying that, you know, the intermediate and short passing game isn't important. I'm just saying is you have to be able to make those throws when they're needed, when there's tight windows downfield. You have to be able to do that to be part of an explosive offense. And I do think that Greer possesses that aspect of his game. So, Paul, moving on to the next player and arguably the player that seems to be the consensus around the world in terms of draft analysts. And again, we're not talking about rankings this episode, so I'm not going to put that on it. But Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert, number 10 from Oregon, the junior, is 6'5", 225 pounds. And last year, he passed for 1,983 yards, good for a 67.5 completion percentage, 15 touchdowns to 5 interceptions, and he rushed for 183 yards and 5 touchdowns. Paul, I'm going to tell you very honestly, when I watched Justin Herbert and I saw his work, the things that really came to mind to me in terms of some strengths and weaknesses, my biggest weakness for me was I saw a little bit of discomfort when he had to move past his first and second read. When the play began to break down and he had to start looking towards different progressions and places, it's not that I didn't see a player who could make the throw, but I thought you could see a definite impact on his timing and his comfort. His body movement wasn't as fluid when he was literally working through his back of his drop, making a hitch step and making a throw. When it was on time and it was in structure, he was at his best. When he had to go off structure, where he had to try to actually manage the pocket, extend the play, and make the pass, that's when I saw some kind of chinks in his armor. And that's why I think for me, he still is a quarterback who's got a lot of upside. I see it, the poise, everything. I see it. But I also think there's some developmental stuff that has to work. So I don't mean to start out with a Debbie Downer on him, because it's not. I know he's the top guy and a lot of people love him. I like him as well. I see a lot of intriguing aspects to his game, but I can't tell you that Will Greer and guys like we haven't even talked about, Jarrett Stidham, might not be guys that if I needed a guy tomorrow, I would invest in.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on. I think right now him being towards the top is a little bit of projecting in terms of what we've seen and more growth. I mean, you know, I think to me the reading coverages was the thing that concerned me the most. He's got to continue to refine his ability to read coverages and improve in that regard, and more consistent with his footwork. You were talking about, you know, at times when that first read wasn't there, I thought sometimes he was a little bit uncomfortable, and if he didn't see that first read, I thought he got a little bit sloppy sometimes with his footwork, and he must be more consistent stepping into his throws rather than throw and fading away or flat footed. I thought that was something that he has to, you know, refine a little bit this year, that footwork as well. I think more experience will come naturally to him. I think he's a guy, and you know, now he's, you know, going to be in his third Oregon, you know, scheme there, not really scheme, but the third coaching staff, I should say. So, you know, that is obviously something that, you know, must be a little bit challenging for young.
So the jury's still out though. So you feel like me then a little bit, like the jury's still out a little bit. Like, I don't know if I'm ready to anoint him quite yet.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I like him, and he's when we do rankings, he's going to be towards the top of my rankings, because the things that I do like already, I am a fan of, like his arm talent. I think, you know, I think when I watch him play, very good arm talent in terms of velocity and strength. I think his accuracy is a strength, good to very good accuracy in the short to intermediate range. And when pushing the ball vertically down the field and outside the numbers, that is a rare trait, I think. I think you often see good accuracy in college in the short to intermediate, but you don't really see it when pushing the ball vertically down the field and outside the numbers. I think Herbert has that ability. His athleticism, you know, to me, good to very good athleticism with his ability to move well laterally in the pocket and outside the pocket when extending the play. Good quickness and average to good speed when he takes off and runs with the football on design runs or when the play breaks down. combination of size and athleticism makes him an effective red zone weapon. Obviously, he's got the prototype size and frame. So, you know, great to elite size and frame, which makes him able to break tackles in the pocket. A little bit of that, you know, what I talked about earlier, you know, that Ben Roethlisberger ability that he can kind of fend guys off at times. To me, I did see some pocket awareness in terms of, you know, his ability to have a calm demeanor and sidestepping, moving laterally to avoid the pressure and extend the play. And I think he does show the ability to play off structure a little bit, you know, and throw on the run on design rollouts or when the play breaks down. My biggest concerns were that decision-making in terms of reading coverages and then the footwork. Those are my two biggest concerns, but there was a lot of things that I liked about him. I think he's best suited in an up-tempo, quick rhythm, spread passing attack. I think his ability with his arm and his legs is what really makes him intriguing to teams. You know, if they were enamored with a guy like Josh Allen,
it's exactly who I thought.
I think the NFL is going to be very enamored with him. And this is a guy who's already checks off the accuracy box, which obviously was the biggest concern. I almost see, to be honest with you, you know, while he's got the athleticism, I almost said I could even see a little Sam Darnold, because Sam Darnold was a little rough around the edges at times, but he showed that size. He showed that athleticism. He showed the ability to play off structure. But at times, think about Sam Darnold. Poor decision-making sometimes, right? He had a lot of turnovers in college.
He was fine.
So I do think there's some Sam Darnold, there's some Josh Allen in terms of him. I do think he's a round one player. I think he's a guy that has the capabilities to be a franchise quarterback and be a first round guy. And again, franchise can be used loosely. It doesn't mean he's going to be a superstar. But the way we talked about the Josh Allens, the Sam Darnolds, you know, those guys in this past draft class, I think most people classify them as franchise quarterbacks, so they wouldn't be going in the first round. I think Herbert has the skill set that an NFL team and that I believe could make him a franchise quarterback. So that's kind of where I am. There's some concerns for sure, but I feel like just like last year, you know, last summer, Josh Allen was my QB1, and then I kind of sidestepped that and went away from that, you know, when I saw some of the games during the season. But even last year when he was my QB1, I thought he was a guy who can go top five and number one overall, Josh Allen. There were still concerns I had. There are concerns with Justin Herbert, but there's a lot that I like also.
No, and I agree with you. And I think that was a really apt comparison, because that's exactly who I was thinking about when I was watching him, was Josh Allen. You see all the tools, you see a lot of things that make him, you know, project as a round one guy, but you say that, you know, there might be an opportunity where he has to be a little bit more on that developmental side of the spectrum for me. And that doesn't mean developmental, meaning he can't be the franchise player. It just means that I hope a team doesn't draft him for that reason, maybe right out of the gate, even though Josh Allen has had tremendous success. So let's move on to our last quarterback for episode one. Let's take a look at Tyree Jackson, number three from Buffalo. He's a redshirt junior. He's 6'6", 245 pounds. And last year, he had 2,096 yards, good for 60.3% completion percentage. He had 12 touchdowns, just 3 interceptions, and he rushed for 197 yards and 4 touchdowns. Paul, I really haven't had a chance to watch Tyree Jackson quite yet, so I'm going to just kind of be a little bit of a fan here and listen to your breakdown of him as we close out the show.
Sure. So Tyree Jackson, again, things that right off the huff stood out: his size and frame. I mean, 6'6", 245, and his arm talent. I think, you know, his very good arm talent in terms of his velocity and his strength. To me, he shows the ability to make any NFL throw, including pushing the ball vertically down the field, outside the numbers, and is willing to put it in the contested situations. To me, his accuracy is just probably average right now at all levels of the field. I'd like to see, you know, a little bit improvement in that regards. He has a quick release and throws with good touch, especially on fade routes in the red zone. Some concerns that I have of him: his poise, his footwork, and his progression reading. To me, he must improve his pocket awareness under pressure, as at times he appears rushed and uncomfortable when facing pressure. He's got to show some refinement with his footwork and make sure to step into his throws and not throw off his back foot. He's got to continue to refine his ability to go through progressions when the first read is not available. But he is comfortable moving around the pocket and throwing on the on the run, on design plays, or when playing off structure. So that is something that, you know, I was impressed with him. I kind of skipped over another strength of his. He's got average, above average to good athleticism for a man his size. And that's pretty special for a guy 6'6", 245. You see what his ability to move around the pocket, the ability to extend plays, and on design rollouts. He also shows the ability to pick up yards rushing if needed, and his size allows him to fight off defenders and be a factor running near the end zone, you know, as you saw with his 4 touchdowns this year. To me, it's that size and arm talent that make him an intriguing NFL prospect, willing to push the ball vertically down the field. I do think he's best suited for a spread offense that incorporates a lot of vertical-based passing concept. To me, his athleticism also enables him to be successful in an offense that utilizes some RPO concepts. To me, he starts out as a third-string quarterback, but he's got the skill set to develop into a backup. I think he'll have some fans and people will be intrigued by him. I think he's a day three prospect, you know, and I guess depending on his graduation status as a redshirt junior, there is a possibility that if he declares, he could be at one of the All-Star games. We've seen that before with some of these guys. So it'll be interesting to see if we get a chance to see him, if he comes out, if he gets to play in one of those All-Star games, or he might just decide to, you know, finish out his college career as well and go back for his redshirt senior year.
You know, and as we kind of close out this show, I think what you hear a lot from these quarterbacks is you hear a lot of oozing upside for a lot of these players, some unknowns, guys with limited experience that have intrigued, a lot of Mitchell Trubisky type of situations going on here, except that these guys will at least be going into year two of their film, both in Will Greer as well as with Justin Herbert. But I mean, this has just been a packed episode. I mean, we cover everybody from Jake Bentley, Justin Herbert, Jake Browning, Ryan Finley, Nick Fitzgerald, DeAndre Francois, Will Greer, Tyree Jackson, who I'm really excited to kind of dig into. I think this is just an interesting class overall. I think there's going to be gems here. It may not be the same class as we saw last year, but man alive, is there going to be some interesting talent to watch this upcoming football season. So, Paul, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it was fun breaking down those guys, and we got another 8 or 9 guys tomorrow. I'm finishing up today, Brian Lewerke from Michigan State, and if I get a chance to finish him, we'll be talking about 9 guys on tomorrow's episode, some other guys on our watch list for draft eligible guys, some underclassmen to be on your radar, and I'll give my rankings, my top 10 at the quarterback position. Really looking forward to part 2. So excited about the sponsors that we have on the show. I didn't get a chance to talk about the Quan Edge when you mentioned it before. I mean, they're wide receiver or quarterback matchups, you know, some of the other features that, you know, not just for daily, I think they're going to be helpful for redraft, for dynasty, for any fantasy football decisions in that regard as well. So super excited for them. And then obviously SquadQL, you know, it's going to be the go-to app to kind of sync all your fantasy leagues across all different platforms, you know, and get advice right at your tip of your fingers on your phone as well. So super excited that we've been able to partner up with both of them. So Matt, why don't you close it on out?
Yeah, and I echo those same thoughts as you said. Listen, guys, time is money. Time is with family. Time is everything in our world. And when you have sponsors like the ones that we're working with that allow you to be efficient and be effective, those are the people that you want to work with. So we're really excited as well. I'm excited to be going to as well. On behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, myself, and Mr. Paul Perticchese, we hope you enjoyed part 1 of the quarterback preview show, and we'll be back soon for part 2. So thank you again for your time, and please join us next time as we take you from Saturday to Sunday.